Welcome to Your Weekly Dose podcast, the only show for those who missed the Mark and Brian radio program. Coming to you from Orange County in Southern California. Hear it happen live without a net every Saturday morning at 10 a.m. Pacific Standard Time. Download past episodes directly from our website, yourweeklydose.com. But if you're on the go, subscribe through iTunes, Podbean, Stitcher, and make sure you leave a review. Now, here's this week's show. I don't know this song. I'm enjoying watching you do this, though.
Oh, my gosh. Well, first of all, let's say hello to everybody. Good morning.
Woo!
And happy Saturday to all of you.
Is that what day it is?
Yes, we got a full house today. We got Steve Silva, Amber Ash McCary.
I made it.
Producer Zach.
Hi, how are you?
And I am Sean Robertson. Together, we are Your Weekly Dose Podcast.
Well, thank you for joining us today as we're streaming live from Orange County, California. We're the only broadcast that continues the traditions of the Mark and Brian radio show. And if you miss them as much as we do, then you've tuned into the right place.
But also, if you're looking for a podcast that's fun, interactive, that you can be a part of, like, I don't know, getting together with your friends at a bar, then this is the podcast for you.
Yes, and for those who have recently found us, thank you guys so much. We're so glad you're here. You know, I'm curious to ask on our Facebook, how did you find us? How long have you been listening?
That'd be a cool question to ask.
Yeah,
sure.
Hit everybody up.
We can put that up.
Yeah, I'll start that one.
Well, today we got a pretty cool show, guys. We're going to catch up with each other. We got some thank yous. We'll be hopefully talking about Armed Forces Day and give some chocolate chip cookie facts.
Yummy.
Yes. But the main thing is at 10:30 today, about a half an hour, we've got special guest John Bermuda Schwartz.
Woo!
If you're not familiar with that name, well, you're definitely familiar with who he works for, which is Weird Al Yankovic. So, see, John is the drummer.
I love it. I can't wait. This is going to be a fun interview.
It's going to be a very fun interview. Yay! And John's got a new book out also, which covers 1983 to 86 about the Weird Al years. And it's a picture book, so it's all these pictures that John
86,
took.
86, he's still going.
And he's still going strong.
He
so
is.
We'll be talking to John about that as well and doing the island questions with him, too. So so that's what we got going on for today.
Wait. John is 86? Is that what you just said? Who's 86?
I didn't hear that.
I don't know.
Neither did I.
Somebody said something about being 86.
I think it's we're getting
no, 83 to 86. The book is covering.
1983 to 1986.
Oh, the years. Okay, that's why I was confused. I thought you were saying that he was in his 80s.
Oh, no.
I mean, he will be one day, maybe.
Yeah, not now.
Hopefully.
Let's hope. So, Steve.
Yes. Well, you know, besides calling in, you can interact with the show in several ways. Comment on our website, yourweeklydose.com. Send a message via Twitter, Instagram at Your Weekly Dose 1. Say hello on Facebook at Your Weekly Dose. Or if you want to send us a personal message, you can email us at yourweeklydose1@gmail.com.
Yes, and you can always download the show for free from the website, yourweeklydose.com. And you can subscribe through iTunes, iHeartRadio, Spotify. Search for Your Weekly Dose. And guys, rate and review the show. And again, I should put that question up.
Yes, definitely.
Get some inquiries.
Today's theme song, though, is Tie a Yellow Ribbon Around the Old Oak Tree, again by the great Tony Orlando and Dawn, that Amber's not familiar with.
I am not, and I didn't know it was this short. I was like, oh, it's a short little ditty.
It is. It's a cute little ditty.
It is.
And as always, you know, any music that we play and we discuss or anything like that, you can always go to our big main sponsor, which is Amazon. Just go to our website, click on the banner.
Clickety-click.
Yep. So Your Weekly Dose, click on the banner, and then shop to your heart's delight, basically, is what you want. Download any music you want. Download, I don't know, a new pair of underwear. Maybe you need some rope.
Maybe you should read a book.
Or some, anything, whatever, like John's book.
Underwear.
Exactly. Things like that. But mainly all the music is there, though.
Yes, music is there.
So And, of course, the reason why we chose it today is for Armed Forces Day.
Oh.
And mainly it became a theme, especially during the first Iraq War, for the soldiers. So every time you see a yellow ribbon,
Okay.
They're coming home. So that's the reason why. So let's go,
let's
go ahead and play the rest of this out here. It has that vaudevillian-esque flavor.
It does. So when was it written and released?
Early 70s, like 71, 72.
I was going to say, I hear that 70s tune.
Yeah.
I like it. It's cute.
They were a huge hit.
Yeah, Tony Orlando the Don, yeah.
Yeah. And this was one of their biggest hits. Go ahead, Rachel, bud. I just love that little...
Yeah.
And the ending is really cool, too. But no, this got associated with the soldiers coming home,
Okay. Basically.
The whole story about this song, though, is a man coming home from prison and asking him, you know, his love of his life, you know, if you still want to be with me together, whatever.
Tie a ribbon.
Oh, this is the best part. Buses cheering, and I can't believe I see 100 yellow ribbons around the
should have waited till after parole. How his behavior was, you know? Like, hey, listen. Sean's little hand movements here. It's like a jazz hands happening over here. Oh, my God.
Jazz fingers. Yeah, jazz fingers. Yeah, a great song. And Tony put out, I mean, a number of hits. And the funny thing with their story with them was that he was under contract with another record label. As an A&R guy.
Oh.
He has a very interesting story. We got to get Tony on the show.
There we go.
I'm on it.
We got to get him on. If he's such a nice guy, he's like the younger version of Trini Lopez.
Oh.
You know. But he basically recorded in secret for a friend of his who wrote a couple of songs. The songs hit it huge. And, I mean, they went to number one. And then they're saying, well, who is Don? Who's Don? You know, because that's the name they went under.
Yeah.
And it was just kind of like all these fake Don bands were coming out of the woodwork saying, oh, well, we're Don. Well, we're Don. Well, they actually go, well, Tony, we have to reveal who it is now, you know.
Yeah.
So he left the record label that he was working at as an A&R, got signed to the other label, and then their career just.
Who the hell's Don?
Don is two women, Thelma Hopkins, and I can never remember the other gal. But
why wasn't Tony Lander and Thelma?
Because it was Don. It was the two women.
Because the other one wasn't Louise.
Don and Don?
Yeah. So,
right.
And Thelma Hopkins, we've seen as an actress in many sitcoms.
We have, yes.
So her and Tony have had the biggest careers, basically. Thelma went into acting, doing various types of sitcoms, always playing the aunt.
Mm-hmm.
But she's done a great job at that. My first time seeing her was in Bosom Buddies. That was the very first time. And then I know she was like in, the one that had Urkel, Family Matters. She played the aunt in that.
Oh, that's so. Right.
What the hell was that? Did a caveman?
My reaction to Urkel.
Steve reacting. So, but yeah, I would love to interview Tony Orlando, though.
Let's do it.
I would love to interview him.
So. What's up, Tony?
Yeah. Real quick, though, we want to thank, the last 2 weeks have just been phenomenal. We got out of the studio. We're back in the studio today.
Yes, they were.
But to listeners Mike and Kay, thank you so much again for opening your home to us. And didn't realize it, but of course, you know, they're the beer aficionados that we love.
Of course.
And,
oh my gosh.
But didn't realize that, of course, that should have been our drunk show because May 5th was coming up.
Yeah, but we...
You know, but we were drinking anyway. But it wasn't
we didn't really get.
It wasn't our drunk show.
We didn't get tipsy until after. We were tasting responsibly.
Yes, we were. Yes.
Now I can't wait. I know that Michael may Kay listen to this, but I can't wait to try the pineapple upside down. Milkshake IPA that she's making. Yeah.
Yeah. Yeah.
I can't wait. And
yeah, baby.
Thank you guys for sharing your puppy with me.
I almost took Charlie home.
Oh, that puppy was so cute.
Oh, little Charlie.
Very cute. So, again, thank you, Mike and Kate, for opening your home again to us.
And all that beer. That's so generous.
Oh, so good. So good. And those shakes. I love those shakes.
The milkshake IPA?
Oh, they were so good.
I brought those.
So, and also thank you to Hank for last week and all the staff at the OCME, which is the Orange County Model Engineers over there at Goat Hill Junction. We just had a great time.
That was so fun.
And you guys had a blast.
I was sick. And
yes, you were.
Still had fun. And we got to ride a friggin' choo-choo. Come on.
And you dropped your phone, which was hilarious.
I did. Zach and I took our little cruise first on the train. They took us out.
Did you really?
And my phone.
Because Hank thought you guys derailed or something.
I got excited about something, and I turned quickly, and my phone went, luckily not screen down, on like the tracks and the gravel.
Uh-huh.
Because those rocks were like,
Well, they're real rocks.
Real rocks.
As opposed to fake rocks.
Yes, yeah. Yes. Or you know, domestic lizard.
They were.
Listen to last week's show, folks. You'll get the joke.
They were jaggedy little rocks, and I was like, oh my god, I don't have a screen protector.
I'm glad you guys had a good time.
We had a blast, and the guys, they were such nerds. They knew all the cool information.
They did.
It was fun. Thank you guys.
Yeah. So thank you to Hank and everybody there at Goat Hill Junction. So can't wait to go back. Well, let's catch up with each other.
Every time.
Steve is like just over there.
Yeah, I know.
What the hell? There we go. Okay.
First of all, before anybody starts, I got to ask. How did you enjoy your gift?
I took it out of the box and I played with it.
Did you? Were the signatures on it?
In the living room a little bit. Because it's a... Okay,
I know it's a real soccer ball.
It's a nice ball. Like, not only is it covered in signatures from the LA Lasers, it is a nice ball. So I was like... And JP, what do you think if I just, like, play with it inside and, like, explore a little bit? He's like, fuck it,
yeah,
do
it's
it,
like
Mom.
The Sandlot all over again.
Who's Babe Ruth?
Baby something.
Yeah.
It's in the dog's mouth and the slobber and the, oh my God. God, I love that movie. I love it. And I love my Megan Klingenberg autographed.
That was me.
Photograph. Thank you.
Is it framed and hanging above your ceiling so you can look at it at night?
No.
That would be cool.
I don't feel that way about her, so I'm not that yet.
Have you framed it yet, though, at least? Or?
No, I have not.
No,
still,
okay.
Yeah, I'm kind of been lazy about that kind of stuff. But I will say one of my most fun gifts that I received.
Yes.
I got a lovely, lovely dinner and had all my friends, a couple of my close girlfriends, was Cal popped over. And in his hands, he had a bamboo plant. Because I don't know if you guys know me. I love my plants and my growing stuff. He brought me the beautiful bamboo plant. He brought me...
Was it big?
No, it's a nice size, and it's in this really beautiful elephant vase thing. It's like this big. Actually, it was like, I don't know. Anyways, I'll take a picture of it and post it, maybe, if I care later. But he brought me two pre-rolls, which I don't even know if I'm going to end up smoking, because my allergies and my voice are all kind of funky. And he brought me a weed clone.
Wow. Okay.
Yeah, this little weed clone plant. And he said, this is for you. But it's also for me. Please take care of it and I'll smoke it for you. I was like, okay, fine. So I got, it was a fun birthday. I had my best friend Joe from Nashville that we've been friends for.
Oh, that's right. The friend came out.
Yeah, she came out and then we went to LACMA. We went to like a museum day. We went to the beach several times.
Awesome.
It was fun. I was a little sick the whole time, but it was worth it. And I'm still
sorry,
fighting
I'm
the
I'm sorry we didn't get a chance to meet her too though.
It's okay, next time. She'll come out again.
Okay.
Yeah.
All right.
I think she's moving out here.
Is she?
Yeah.
Oh, good for her. Mm-hmm. Good for her.
Good to have friends.
Zach.
What's up?
How did you enjoy your birthday present?
He hated it. I'm kidding.
Rolled it up and tossed it. No.
Sorry.
No, I busted it out and used it on Sunday.
Woo!
Nice. How did it sound?
Sounds great. Also, it sounds even better now that I got a good spot in my house that isn't picking up all the acoustics, is because I found an area of the house that has carpet.
So here's the question.
So now with
how
that and that.
It not sound? That is the accurate way to ask it.
It does
not
sound.
Sound?
I can tell you what it doesn't sound like.
Echoey?
Are you ready? It doesn't sound like Amber asking me, what does it sound not sound like? It definitely does not sound like that at all.
Busted.
So it helped out quite a bit, though.
Yeah, and it will continue to help out quite a bit. Cool. It's so portable, too. I love these things.
Cool. Good. I'm glad.
Good idea, Sean.
Yeah,
that was a good
very.
One.
What we're talking about, basically, is that Zach also works for iHeartRadio. He does traffic for KFI Radio.
KFI in the sky.
And the thing is that most of it, still because of COVID, everybody's remote. So Zach does his traffic news reports, basically, from his house. But he didn't have anything treated, so it sounded where he was sitting at sounded very echoey,
tingy.
Yeah. So Steve and I and Amber, we decided to pull our money together and basically get him what they call a microphone baffle. It's kind of like this foam thing that kind of goes around the microphone itself and helps reduce that echoey noise. Basically,
how does it not sound?
I wish I could use it in the helicopter.
Oh, that would be awesome.
Okay, if I in the sky, I have a thing around my microphone so I don't sound douchey. And also, I can't hear Amber not telling me, what does it not sound like? Zach Tegan, okay, if I in the sky.
Oh, boy.
So. Sean, you want to talk about anything in the helicopter? I'm in here.
What's that thing down there?
That is my hand next to my crotch. Why are you looking there?
Sorry.
Oh. Hey, look. Now I'm looking out the window.
Is that why he sounds so excited when he does the report?
I
sound robotic.
It's a Robin Williams thing. Yeah. Always touching himself.
Oh, my gosh.
And in a helicopter, no one can hear you scream. Never mind.
But you're actually in a plane, when you go up. So.
Yeah, I know. Helicopters get a better sound effect.
Yeah. That's kind of cool. I still give you kudos for getting into that plane, dude.
I mean, I don't have much of a choice. If I had to choose a helicopter, I would choose a helicopter.
Yeah.
But it's so much like being in a can of sardines. It's so tight in there. Because it's such a small, not exaggerating, it's a small,
Well, it's a Buddy Holly special is what it is.
Pretty much.
Buddy Holly special.
It is, and I ain't going to play Richie Valens, I'll tell you that right now.
Put on a pair of glasses, I feared for my life.
Yeah, I'm not going to flip a coin, but you know what, I mean, for those pilots, though, who do that, I think there has only been one fatality for the guys who do the traffic, though, that I'm aware of, and that was Bruce Wayne. Who worked for KFI years.
Batman?
Yeah, I wish it was the Batman.
Boy, was it that easy? It was that easy, wasn't it?
Sorry, it was like a T-ball. It was like right up on the T. Yeah,
I know. I was going to say it, too.
He was the only one that I know that has crashed, unfortunately. That's, in 50 years, I've never heard of another traffic plane or helicopter.
Fly, like, over the Caribbean. That's where they all go down, right?
Yeah. I mean, maybe.
Yeah, because Lord knows there's a lot of traffic in the Caribbean.
There is.
Seriously, how many people die like going like South America and the Caribbean? Like those little planes go down.
Well, that's because they hit the Bermuda Triangle and they're idiots. You want to stay away from the Bermuda Triangle?
You couldn't even draw where it is on a map,
huh?
You couldn't even draw where the Bermuda Triangle is on a map.
Yes, you could. Yeah,
could.
It goes from the tip of Florida down to Cuba, up to the Bahamas, and then back again.
It's a triangle, and it's near Bermuda. How hard can it fucking be?
Well, with that attitude, maybe a little bit.
So that was your birthday. You went to dinner. I'm sidetracking you.
We're still on me. Oh, yeah. Oh my God, that was the best. That was the best birthday dinner ever. So there's this place called Bari Bari. It's in Yorba Linda. It's right by my house. It's been there for 25 years. I've never stepped foot in it, mostly because it's only open for dinner time and they're not open on Sundays. So we decided to try it out, and it's like a Benihana's.
Cool.
They literally cook everything right in front of you. They give you they do the vegetables first, and then the rice, and then the meats, and I went all out on filet mignon and shrimp. It was delicious.
I'm jealous.
It was the most perfect filet mignon I've ever had in my life. It was like he cut it like it was cutting into warm butter, and you bite into it, and it's just warm
butter meat.
Yes. And
Sean.
Okay, you can stop that now.
Donuts.
Don't what? We're talking about butter meat, not donuts. Oh, wow. Oh, my God. I'm just going to keep going. I'm uncomfortable now.
Wow, this derailed.
That's a good birthday. That's a fantastic birthday.
And leftovers lasted like 2 days. It was great.
That's cool.
Oh, nice. And then Steve.
Huh?
He was high. That was all he did. How about you?
Yeah, pretty much. That was Steve's week.
There, I woke up.
Steve.
Oh. We're actually doing the podcast right now?
Yeah. Oh,
okay. Holy crap.
You look over and he's on his like his little Samsung tablet, and it's like, you know, he's probably looking at anime porn.
Probably.
Probably.
And
probably.
For those of you listening at home, it's called hentai.
Odds are.
Odds are.
I don't know.
Unfortunately.
Oh, and we got that, and now he's doing the slap. So. It's that podcast.
No, I've had a fun.
Oh
like,
my god! Okay.
Okay.
Jeez. That too.
Oh my god!
Lots of that. Lots of.
Oh my god.
So
everyone's turned us off now. They're like, "Oh wow."
No, everyone's probably wondering what that is. It's supposed to be a masturbating joke for those of you listening.
I almost just spit my tea out. Okay, no, stop. I don't want
to. Masturbation is king. I know it.
Away.
You know it. What are we all worried about?
Key.
Going blind.
Thou sayeth the Lord. If you masturbate in private, you will go blind.
Been spending more time watching Tubi TV movies and stuff. Saw a couple of movies with Shaggy in it. They had nothing to do with Scooby-Doo.
Wait, what are you talking about? Is this, who what
just like Shaggy the rapper?
What was it? No, Shaggy.
Oh.
Lillard.
Matthew Lillard, not Shaggy Lillard. Shaggy doesn't have a last name.
No, Shaggy is just Shaggy.
Shaggy does have a last name.
The guy who plays his last name is Lillard.
That's what I was pointing out. Is this some like 2.5 men bullshit?
Welcome to the show, guys.
Is that what this is? Yeah. 2.5 men?
Just about.
Okay. Yeah. So, and my friend Robin was in town for a while. We went to like downtown. Well, first we went to the Chop House.
Uh-huh.
We were able to get in there and do the brunch where you get the unlimited mimosas.
Oh, yes, you mentioned this.
The meal. Yeah, that was good. Had fun and that's it.
All right.
Well, good.
Awesome.
All right.
And then he ate edibles and fell asleep. Yeah. And Sean.
This week.
Steve, we love you. We love
actually,
you, Steve.
I got to work on my train quite a bit.
Yeah.
So if we go. If we go out to the garage or whatever, I finally cut the area where the lake is going to go.
Oh.
And I've cut the angle for the shore.
Does it mean it's a man-made lake?
Yes, it's a man-made lake.
Okay.
Yes. Yes. There's no waterfall coming in, so it is a man-made lake.
Okay. Dammed it up.
Yeah. So I started to work on that and everything. So today I got to go out and get the stuff to make the water. Mm-hmm. And then I got to paint the bottom of it so that way, look, it's a deep lake.
It is now. What is this lake's water source? What is its?
Well, it's man made, so it's.
But where is it? It's still even a man made lake has to have a source.
Oh, we bring trucks in with water, and they.
Really? That's
Yeah, man made lake.
Fascinating. Okay.
Yeah, exactly.
There's no natural spring. There's no.
Then water just when it rains.
It goes
into the lake.
All right, I'm feeling a Salton Sea vibe here.
So yeah, pretty much. You know.
Oh God.
And then after that, I have to build the trestle that goes across the lake. So that's almost done. So I'm pretty excited. It's kind of cool.
I see this excited about the choo-choos.
Yes. And then actually, I got some information yesterday about the choo-choos that kind of got me really excited.
You're like bouncing in your chair. You're like a little kid.
Yeah, it's for nerds. So
I won't. It is for nerds.
It is.
Well, yeah, spare us. We love your excitement, but spare us.
Okay, I'll tell you.
Oh, shit. I tried. I'm so sorry, people. I tried.
So, Athern, which is a company that makes trains, they're finally coming out. So, supposedly 10 years in the making, but they're finally coming out with the Surfliner cars for Amtrak.
Oh, that's right.
So, you can get the engines with no problem. But it's always been hard to find the Surfliner cars.
Mm-hmm.
They're a special design for California, even in real life. So now the company Athern is going to be able to release them.
Real life as in full scale?
Yes.
Okay.
And which they call the prototypes. I don't know why it's a prototype, because to me that means something that's, you know, before the real thing.
Yes.
So anyway, they're going to come out next year. But what they call DCC, there's these chips inside each car separately, and each car has
Pringles?
Its own. Yeah, I wish. but each of these chips will have its own sound. So each car will have its own sound as it goes by. So, yeah, which is going to be kind of cool. So you hear the clickety-clack
of each one.
Of each car.
Aww.
And they all sync up. and everything. So okay. it's gonna be really cool. So I can't wait.
Does this have anything to do with Amtrak's anniversary? It was last.
I don't know. I don't think so. I don't think this was really planned because I mean it's coming out next year.
Yeah, that makes. Yeah.
So they just announced it the other day. And it's coming out next year, but the thing is, a lot of people have actually had to like get their own cars and spray paint them themselves and create and you know do it from scratch basically. Mm-hmm. So, which I started to do myself, but probably still will, so I can have extra cars and have a couple of Amtraks running at the same time. California Amtrak.
Several Surfliners.
Yes, yeah, several Surfliners.
The only
reason
you're involved in that is because you like to say clickety clack. Where else do you get to say that?
Nowhere.
Clickety-clack. Yeah. Don't talk back. So, but yeah, so I'm excited about that. But I got to wait a year now, so.
Choo-choos.
Yes. So it was a big week for choo-choos this week.
All right.
So, which is kind of cool. So.
Well, we did it.
Yeah, we did.
We caught up.
Real quick.
Off the rails a few times, but we did.
Yeah, real quick. Again, today is Armed Forces Day. And it's the third Saturday in May. And, of course, we pay tribute to the military personnel serving the United States Armed Forces. The celebration takes place each year during Armed Forces Week. And, of course, the United States military is composed of five different branches, including the Army, Air Force, Navy, Marine Corps, and Coast Guard. As of 2019, more than 1.3 million active duty service members are stationed in the United States and around the world. That's a hell of a lot of people. An additional 800,000 reservists stand ready in the Army National Guard and the Air National Guard. So the holiday basically is to unite the country behind the men and women who currently serve in the United States military. I've had a grandfather who served in the Army during World War II, a father who served in the Air Force during the Cold War times, and a father-in-law who served 20 plus years in the Coast Guard. I cannot be more proud of those men. And because they did something I couldn't do, which is go into the service myself. And if you run into any type of military personnel this mm-hmm. week, go up and say thank you to them.
Buy them a beer. Buy them a coffee.
Say thank you. Buy them a beer. Buy them lunch. Okay. You know,
buy them a car.
It takes a special person to join the military. It really does. I have a couple of nieces and nephews and cousins who have joined also. A couple of neighbors joined the Marines. Very, very proud, you know, when somebody steps up
Absolutely.
That way, you know. So we're going to play this song just for a little bit out here and while we get our guest on the phone. So... enjoy this. This is Toby Keith, American Soldier. Jeopardy, I will always do what's right. I'm out here on the front lines. Sleep in peace tonight. American Soldier. I'm an American Soldier. And once again, that is Toby Keith's American Soldier. So, Armed Forces Day, guys. Again, if you see a military person, not only just shake their hand and say thank you, but buy them dinner, buy them a drink, buy them anything.
Absolutely.
Yeah, they deserve it. Absolutely. Well, I have been listening to today's guest since 1983. He's been the drummer with Weird Al Yankovic since 1980, and he is seen and heard on all of Al's albums, his videos, and, of course, all the performances. He is currently has a book out called Black and White and Weird All Over. This is a 208-page hardcover coffee table book featuring ton of behind-the-scenes black and white photos of Weird Al and assorted callings on video sets and in the studio early in his career. Although several hundred of the photos have been published or been seen online before, nearly all of these photos have remained unseen since they were taken 34-plus years ago. Even Al hasn't seen them until the book was in progress. It's a fascinating photographic journey with a foreword written by Al. So please welcome to the show, John Bermuda Schwartz. Hello, John.
Hi there. Wow, that was great. Do I even need to be here?
No, not really. Well, no. We can say everything that you need to say, so, you know, just enjoy it.
Wow.
I voted for a kazoo to open you in, but Sean wanted to do these nice words. And
How are you doing today, John?
I'm good. I'm never nervous on interviews. Never, ever, ever, ever.
That's wonderful.
On stage. And this is a different thing. This is, you know, sort of following in the footsteps of Mark and Brian. It's like really, it's a different thing. It's a really different thing. So cool, just if I stumble on my words, you know, I apologize.
No worries. First of all, John, how have you been dealing with and how has COVID affected you?
Well, I've been sitting home like most people. Mm-hmm. Fortunately, last year we were not going to be on tour. So last year was going to be a year off anyway. Now, I'm in several local bands here in L.A., and none of them were working. So really, I haven't played drums with live humans in since March of last year. And I missed that. You know, sitting home playing on the drums is not quite the same.
Right.
But, as you mentioned, the book came out last November, and there was a lot of prep throughout the year to do that, so that kept me busy. And this year we were going to be on tour, but it was not to be, or it was to be not. So I'm sitting home again this year, and what I'm doing is scanning all of my color photos, one to just get them archived and kind of revisit my childhood and the years with Al through about 2007 when I was shooting film. And possibly there might be another book in the works.
Wonderful. That's great.
Awesome.
To hear. Well, let's go back to the beginning with you, John. Chicago born, and what was your childhood like back in Chicago, and how did you come to playing the drums?
Well, I was really young when we left Chicago, so I don't have many memories of that. I grew up really in Phoenix, starting in about 1960, and we lived there through 68, and that's also where I started playing drums. Now, it happened that my brother was playing drums, and he switched to guitar. And I inherited his drums. And I had actually been playing accordion prior to drumming.
Really?
Yeah, so I could have been the boss. And Al could have been my drummer.
Yeah.
Weird Bermuda. And that was in 1965. So I've been beating the skins for a long time. And wasn't too long after that I kind of, in my mind, decided I wanted to be a professional drummer. And not having any idea what that entailed or... You know, there's really not a career path in music, so there wasn't really, well, I'm going to do this and this and this and go to school and all that. It doesn't work that way. I got lucky, honestly. You know, I was at the right place at the right time and met Al. And you know, and I was in bands and stuff before that. But, you know, would I have the notoriety that I have now, and would I have, the 30 drum sets that I have now and a bunch of gold and platinum records? Probably not.
Right. What was, growing up in Phoenix then, what was your high school years like?
I didn't quite make it to high school there. I was still in the elementary school, and I was young, and I was born in 56. So by the time we left Phoenix, I was only 12. So I hadn't gotten into high school yet.
Okay.
Elementary school was they were just the normal classes. You know, you had one teacher basically that taught you everything. You sat in there all day long, and it wasn't for a few more grades till you started going to some other teachers who maybe specialized in biology or English or math or something like that. But no real direction musically at school at the time. That didn't happen until I got into junior high here in L.A. and got straight into the advanced band. And, you know, got was playing orchestral stuff and dance band stuff and, you know, different kind of things, some classical stuff. And, yeah, I was in marching bands, got together with some of my buddies from school, from different schools, actually.
Mm-hmm.
And in those days, I didn't really know guitar players or keyboard players. They were all horn players, you know, so saxophone player, a guy named Richard Elliott, who mm-hmm. did very well. I went to school with him. In fact, he played on one of the recordings I sent to Dr. Demento early on.
Oh, wow.
So these guys were all in bands with me. We played Dixie music and stuff like that. And just, you know, for no real reason, we would just get together and just play songs. I made tapes of all these things, too. I just always archived everything.
I'll be doing.
And, you know, it was a while before I got into bands that actually had, like, you know, that were pop bands that had guitar and bass and stuff like that.
And growing up, though, as a drummer, who were some of your influences?
Well, starting when I did, I mean, you know, the Beatles, of course, so Ringo, Charlie Watts with the Rolling Stones. Stuff that I heard on the radio, a lot of the pop hits were played by a studio musician named Hal Blaine.
Oh, I love Hal Blaine.
Very fortunate to meet and become friends with later on.
Oh, wow.
So I guess Ringo and Hal really are my two main influences, which is, you know, you play the right part. You know, you don't have to be fancy. Mm-hmm. Now, the opposite end of the spectrum, I really liked what Frank Zappa was doing, even in the early, you know, relatively simple 60s and 70s for him before things got really complicated.
Right.
So I was listening to Jimmy Carl Black and Billy Monday and those, and Art Tripp, Ainsley Dunbar stuff. And it started to get a little more complicated with Ralph Humphrey and Chester Thompson in the early 70s. And I kind of lost my desire to try and emulate that stuff. But, you know, I was always very fascinated with that. And so, I mean, I have a lot of influences, but it really does come down to what I started with and really what I still do, which is a lot of very straight ahead drumming. And that's what Ringo did. That's what Hal did.
Right. Right, yeah, and for those of you not familiar with Hal Blaine, I definitely suggest on watching the documentary called The Wrecking Crew, because that he was part of the main drummer for The Wrecking Crew, really, and is on over, I don't know, maybe 5,000 recordings. I'm not exaggerating on that either. I mean, he did so many things, so definitely a legend, absolutely. So
honestly, Hal is probably my big hero, and then Ringo is a very close second.
Yeah, yeah. So I take it out of high school then and everything, playing around with, like you said, with the different bands and so forth. How is it then that you came in to meet Weird Al?
Well, back in the day, you know, the high school and junior high kids, we all listened to the Dr. Demento show, which was live on KMEA on Sunday nights. And it was broadcast around the country. It was syndicated eventually. But at the time, 71, 72, you know, that was where we all were. And all of my friends listened to it, too. So at some point, actually early 73, the doctor ran a contest for people who, you know, musicians or not musicians, to do their own version of a really popular song on the show at the time called Pico and Sepulveda. And it was so popular that it was just constantly, like, in the top five of the show, and it was just kind of getting silly, I guess, or it was a good excuse to have a contest. And he basically took it off the air and said, you guys, you know, send in your versions of the song, and the number one version will receive a copy of Pico and Sepulveda on 78, the original.
Oh, jeez.
By Felix Figueroa, and I forget his actual name, but he was like a band leader, a well-known band leader, and that was just sort of a gag thing that he did. So, of course, my friends and I, you know, we cooked up a version of that. I had Richard Elliott played sax on that. A guy named Barry Keyes played trombone. I think he ended up in the Tonight Show band later. Jeff Rona played flute on that. Jeff invented MIDI, or he was one of the guys on the committee at Roland that invented MIDI back in the
day. Wow.
And he's also scored a bunch of stuff for TV and movies and things like that. So he went on to do very, very well, certainly better than I did. And anyway, we sent in our version, and we didn't make first place, but we got second place, which was really cool. And back in those days, you had to listen to the radio to find out if you placed. You know, there
right.
were no emails or phone calls to say, you know, listen tonight because you're in the top 10. Well, we came in second on that, and I got a couple of records, not Pico and Sepulveda, but a couple of other things signed by Dr. Demento. But he also used our version as his theme song, because we did an instrumental version, so he could run at the beginning of the show, and then he could talk over it. So he ran that for a while, you know, there. And we thought that was really cool to get played on the radio. It was. And, you know, that was really hard to do. Uh-huh. And not long after that, we recorded another song, and we sent that in, and he played that on the radio, too. And about another year went by, year and a half, and now it's like 1975. We sent another song in, and he played that on the radio. So, and which was still pretty rare, because at the time, you know, he was still playing a lot of old jazz and novelty stuff. It was really rare for him to play homemade music on the show at the time.
Right.
A few more years went by, and homemade musicians, you know, did start getting their stuff played on the show and were getting popular on the show. And I got invited to come down and do an interview talking about how I was one of the first couple of people to get homemade music played on the show. I could maybe promote the local band I was in at the time, which is a band called Nipper. Weird Al was there that night. This was September 14th, 1980. And that's the night I met Al. And I knew who Al was. He was already very popular on the show. He was there answering phones and stuff. Uh-huh. Well, he was going to debut a song that night that he had written that weekend. And Another One Rides the Bus, a parody of Another One Bites the Dust by Queen. And he asked if I would beat on his accordion case, you know, because it was just accordion. And then all the rest of the cast members would clap hands or sing or whatever. We kind of rehearsed it before going live on the air with it. So I did that with him, and to his credit, Dr. Demento rolled tape on that. So we have like a real tape of that, not just a cassette air check.
Right.
And it actually was put out as a single. But after we were done with that, I said, Al, that was, you know, that's a lot of fun. You know, you need to have a band. I'll be your drummer. And and now here we are talking about it. And I had no idea, you know, there was nothing in my mind or perhaps in Al's mind or in anyone's mind that there would be a real future. I mean, everything was very Dr. Demento show, you know, limited audience. And of course, it went way beyond that. And I'm still there.
That's awesome.
Which is amazing. Yeah.
I found this picture and it's you and Al, and he's like laying back on the couch. I think he looks asleep, and he has his accordion in his lap, and then you're kind of behind the couch, and you have like, it looks like a harmonica rig and with the, a Donald Duck whistle and like a little, plastic kids thing, and then horns on one of your drum things. And it's the funnest picture.
That is, that was taken in New York the night before we did the Tomorrow Show back in April of 1981. That was the first time, either of us had been on national TV.
Oh, wow.
Jeez.
And that was in the hotel room back in the day at the Berkshire Place.
Okay.
Where they, you know, NBC used to put up all the people. And we just, you know, I set up the camera on the counter or something and took a couple of pictures. That rig is... That's his accordion case, and I fixed it up.
Oh, gotcha. Okay.
For the show. I inherited the case. I fixed it up. I put a little bar, like a rack across it. I mounted a bulb horn and a ratchet. And I had, that was a harmonica holder around my neck, and it had like a duck call. It had a Donald Duck call, which was different than the real duck call.
Yeah.
It had probably a siren whistle on it. I'm not sure. Anyway, that was all the stuff that I used on the Tomorrow Show.
It's a really fun picture. And you look happy. You're like... And he's asleep.
Oh, there's another picture. I took two pictures, and there's one where his eyes are wide open.
Oh, okay.
And I think the sleeping one is probably a nicer picture of me. That's why I put that
Oh, gotcha.
There.
That's how
Whenever
we pick
there's
photos.
A picture of me and him, I take the nice picture of me. He just winds up whatever he looks like.
Such a good friend. Such a good friend.
So immediately after you guys met and everything, how did the culmination of the band begin to form?
They came along. Actually, we got a recording. We got some studio time at the old Cherokee Studios in L.A.
Yeah,
and we got that because Al wanted to do a version of I Love Rock and Roll called I Love Rocky Road.
Right.
And he wanted to I don't think really record it, but he just, you know, he had a manager at this time, who was still his manager.
Wow.
And he, I think, suggested, you know, before you put any more stuff on the Dr. Demento show, it'd be a good idea to get the writer's permissions and just make sure. Because we had, at that point, already had a problem with George Harrison's people. We tried to put out Pac-Man for Taxman. And, folks didn't really, really dig that. And so I think from that point on, it's like, oh, you know what, we better. And that was just a Dr. Demento thing. It wasn't trying to release it.
Right.
But it was just the idea, you know, it was... didn't even fall under fair use. Apparently it should have, but it didn't.
Mm-hmm.
So, you know, in seeking permission, Al contacted one of the writers of I Love Rock and Roll, called his name is Jake Hooker, and he was in a band called the Arrows. They did the original version of I Love Rock and Roll. And Jake gave permission and said, you know, and he heard this demo we had done of it, and he says, you know, you guys should go in and record these things. If you got a bunch of songs, let's go in and record. One of my clients is Rick Derringer, and he'll produce you, and we'll get some studio time on spec, and then you know, you'll have something to shop, and you know, let's get this off the ground. It's like, oh, okay, yeah, cool. Somebody wants to put a studio, we'll go. So we went, and so at that point, we had to actually get a band. We'd had some different players play with us on a couple of gigs, and none of them, and then they were asked if they wanted to be in the band, you know, be a band with us, and they were like, eh, no, we don't really, nah, it's okay. So we, I think we found the bass player, Steve J, through, who is still with us.
Right.
Through Musicians Contact Service, which was
really
like a networking thing at the time. That's, I think it's still around online.
Yeah.
Found him through there. And we worked with him a little bit and, you know, worked on all the songs we were going to do. Rick would play guitar since we didn't have a guitar player yet. Now, we did actually get a guitar player just before the session. And there was a friend of Steve's named Jim West, who is also still with us.
Right. Nickname Chemo.
Yeah. Jim Chemo West.
Yeah.
And so he didn't quite make it in on the tracks that we did at Cherokee. So it was basically me, Steve on bass, Rick Derringer on guitar, and Al on accordion.
Wow.
And we did a bunch of tracks that became the first album. By the time that got shopped and we got a record deal, the stuff was a little stale. The label said, have you got anything new? So we recorded a couple of more songs, and this time Jim was in place. We'd already done a few gigs with him. And he appeared along with Rick. Rick continued to play on the first several albums that he produced. So by the first album and the first tour, the band was in place, and it's still the same guys, which is really
amazing.
Extremely rare in this business.
It is extremely rare. To get Rick Derringer, I mean, someone of that stature and knowing what he had done in the past, I mean, what was Rick's idea going in and with these songs that Al had written, both originals and the parodies? I mean, was he thinking, you know, this is just kind of crazy, or you know, why did you bring me into this kind of a thing?
Probably a little bit of both. And then eventually, though, within a couple of albums, it's like, oh, I love being here. You know, and I love my gold albums and my salary and all the rest of things that go with it. You know, it was sort of another gig for him. I mean, honestly, nobody got paid at that time, not the studio, none of us. I mean, maybe they flew Rick out from wherever he lived and flew him back. But nobody made any money. It was a couple of more years before any of us saw anything from that album.
Jeez.
I think he kind of dug it. I think, you know, he's got a great sense of humor, and I think it was fun for him. And again, the first album, you know, videos, MTV was new at the time. First album came out, I think, in May of 83. So MTV was still new, still hungry for videos. There was nothing like Al on there, nothing, you know, humorous or lighthearted. Everyone took themselves very seriously because videos were such an art back then, and it was, you know, had to be carefully crafted and everything else. I mean, some of them were unspeakably bad, but some of them would be really well done. Anyway, ours were just, it was comedy.
Right.
And sometimes there was a bit of a takeoff on, in the case of the parodies, on the original video, we would try and do a takeoff on that video, like, you know, Eat It was modeled very closely after Beat It.
Right.
I Love Rocky Road had some elements of Joan Jett's I Love Rock and Roll. Ricky, which was the first single and the first video, takeoff on Tony Basil's Mickey, had really nothing to do with the Tony Basil video. It was about Ricky Ricardo. It was about Lucille Ball.
Right. Really. I remember that.
And the lady that sang and played Lucy in the video was Tress McNeil. And Tress went on to do many, many cartoon voices.
Wow.
Has been doing voices for The Simpsons for a million years. Anyway, back in 1983, she was brand new to the business, and that was probably her first big thing.
Jeez.
But Rick stuck around, or his contract ended, or whatever it was. He stuck around till like 89. He did six albums with us. And I know he's very proud of that, because Al had many gold and platinum albums, you know, then and since. And a lot of that has to do with Rick. Now, in the beginning, and what Rick helped bring to us is, for the first album, it was very accordion-based. There was the whole novelty thing. We really hadn't thought much beyond that. you know, Al would turn a rock song into an accordion song.
Right.
And by the second album, I think it was Rick that said, you know, we should really try and make these sound like the parodies, you know, really go after that sound of the originals, and that may help sell the parody. And that's why Eat It sounds
so
close to Beat It, you know.
Right.
I mean, looking back, yeah, we didn't really nail it. We got much better at that stuff much later on.
Well, I know every time my son and I, you know, will throw in a Weird Al CD, and you know, or we even hear actually the original song on the radio, you know, it, instead of doing the original lyrics, we'll sing the Weird Al lyrics instead over it. Because to me, sometimes those songs are so much better than the original, you know.
A lot more fun, anyway.
Exactly, you know, and they're more memorable is what it is.
They're deliberately funny also.
Yeah, exactly. John, when you're going in to do the parodies, I mean, as a drummer, though, how close are you getting to, I mean, what's your preparation in going in to making sure that you're playing those drums properly to the recording?
Well, I have to listen. Listening is the key. But it's, as the years went on, you know, I listened closer, and technology improved on my end, or my grasp of technology improved, and I was able to figure out, you know, there's a lot of programming involved later on, and I was able to listen and sort of figure out what to do to get that stuff going, because we were always chasing, like, cutting-edge production on rock and rap and hip-hop songs and stuff like that we would parody. And, you know, these other producers and artists were way ahead of where we were, and we're listening, trying to figure out what they did, or trying to figure out how to do what they did to make the sounds. And for me, it was probably difficult in the beginning. I was using drum machines when it came to some of those songs, and while some of the producers were already, you know, customizing samples and stuff. So I was always a couple of years behind the edge. I mean, I finally eventually caught up, I hope, I think, you know, to where I knew how to create sounds that I could hear. As far as acoustic parts and sounds, I went out and bought a lot of drums and cymbals, which I still have.
Uh-huh.
I have well over, because cymbals are very, and cymbals in particular are very individual. You can't alter the sound of a cymbal the way you can a snare drum or things like that.
Right, yeah.
I'm well known for my cymbal arsenal, which numbers, as of, what is today, Saturday, the 15th, 1,028 cymbals.
Wow.
So where's the extra house you have to hold it?
It's not far from here. I actually have most of them. Well, first off, they stack up very small. They're an eighth of an inch thick, you know, so really you can line up a lot of cymbals, hundreds and hundreds, in just, you know, a few feet. So they don't take up as much room as, say, having 1,000 snare drums.
Right.
You know, which is why I only have 111 snare drums.
Oh, jeez.
That's it. That's all. That's it.
Wow. How do you, I mean,
because 112 would be weird.
Well, I had 112 until the other day. I actually, you know, I am now, I'm going to be, I won't tell you how old I am, but I was just approved for Medicare today.
So, yay!
So I hope I need a new heart or something like that. That'd be great. I think you get a new heart for $100. It's great.
Oh, gosh. Let's hope that's not the case.
Oh, okay. Well,
for
eventually.
You.
Yeah.
Yes.
And it'll be dirt cheap, which would be great. So I am gradually beginning to let go of my excess stuff.
Wow.
And I did actually sell a snare the other day. So up to a couple of days ago, I did have 112. You know, with any luck next week, I'll have 110. You know, so it's going to be about 10 years and I'll get rid of all my snares.
Jeez. John, when you do go in, I mean, with that many cymbals, with that many snares and everything, I take it by now, because you've been doing this, you know, for 30 plus years, you kind of know which ones to go for in the studio and helping the producer out then, right?
Right. Well, I choose those ahead of time, you know, with that in mind. I mean, I know exactly, you know, we have studied the originals already, and we already know what sounds and parts we're doing. You know, in fact, on the parodies, we don't rehearse them at all. You know, I think we stopped rehearsing parodies in the early 80s because there was no need. There was no need to massage parts. We weren't creating any parts. We were recreating, and
right.
We could do that on. So we would literally play those songs for the first time in the studio on take one. It was the first time we would play those songs as a band.
Wow. And what is the process then for you as a drummer when Al comes in with an original song? And what does he allow you to do, or how does your creativity come in part of it?
Most of Al's originals are sort of based on other groups' songs, some of his favorite artists, or some group that's perhaps popular, or a group that's quirky enough that lends itself to the subject matter. And, you know, he will give a certain amount of freedom and a certain amount of direction to the whole band, in fact. You know, he'll tell Jim on guitar, you know, do a solo similar to that, but not, you know, copyrightable solo, but, you know, do with that vibe. And, you know, mm-hmm. and we pretty much know what he's doing, what he wants to do. But he may, for the drums, he may specify a certain fill. He says, I want the fill that he did here. I want that fill in my song here, you know, or something like that. But I go through and I have to put myself in the headspace of those original drummers. Like if we when we did a Doors sounding song, a style parody they've come to be called, it was called Craigslist. And it was based a little bit on Riders on the Storm and a little bit of this, a little bit of that. I sort of had to put myself in John Densmore's place, his headspace. You know, if Al had called him in to do the session on a Doors sounding song, but not to actually copy anything he did 50 years ago, what would he do?
Right.
And that's where I have to be. So I have to get in their heads, and which is very cool because I become these drummers. You know, I
wow.
am these drummers. You know, we did a Beach Boys sounding thing, so I got to be Hal Blaine. Well, in fact, we did.
Was that for Pancreas?
That was Trigger Happy.
Oh, okay.
Which was on Off the Deep End, I think. But we also had done MacArthur Park, Jurassic Park, and Hal was the drummer on MacArthur Park.
Yeah.
So I got to be Hal, and in fact, I played Hal. I gave him a cassette of our version of Jurassic Park, and you know, I played it for him. He was here at the house, and he was listening. He was like crying because it just really was touching.
Wow.
Or maybe he hated what I did. I don't know. Maybe he couldn't believe I had murdered his parts like that. I go way out of my way to really nail the parts and the sounds, and which is really has become very easy on the programmed stuff, on the sequence things, because I don't have to worry about all the weird little nuances, the playing nuances and the sound nuances. I can dial in samples very, very quickly.
Wow.
And I can really, on our last several albums, I think I've really nailed those parts and sounds. In fact, all the guys have, to mm-hmm. where if you listen to our instrumental track, you would think that was the original song without that person's vocals.
Well, you know,
like Anna or whoever it is, you know.
Yeah, well, I brought up Pancreas earlier, and the thing is, to me, you know, when I first heard that, I mean, Al did such a great job. All of you did such a wonderful job on that, but the arrangement was, I mean, I could have sworn, and I was reading through the credits to see if Brian Wilson had any part of that. And he didn't, and Al did such a great job of recreating, I think, a Brian Wilson-ish type of song for that song. And it's one of my favorites.
Oh, well, thank you. Well, that's what he does. That's what we all do on the originals. Is, you know, we get to create something from scratch that you would think might be, you know, that band, Talking Heads or
right.
like that, or The Police, or, you know, Elvis Costello, for example. I'm So Sick of You was taken more or less after Pump It Up,
mm-hmm.
you know. And you would, the idea being that you would think, other than the lyrics, that could be that band. And that's what's cool, which is a great feather in all of our caps, actually.
It is.
Yeah, that's really neat. Well, John, let's start talking about this book that you have now. Was it a Black and White and Weird All Over? These pictures are from between 1983 and 1986, I believe, right?
Correct.
How did you, was this just pictures you just started to take, or did you start to have a side hobby of photography as well?
Well, I had started photographing stuff. I had my own darkroom at home back in the 70s, and a lot of black and white. Eventually, I started shooting color, and when I left home and didn't have a darkroom anymore, I could only shoot color. So it was, you know, when I started taking photos of Al, they were all color, but there were certain, like the Ricky video is the first thing. That was our first video, and that was the first roll of film that I had shot black and white on Al, because I thought it was kind of, it lended a certain vibe. It was kind of a different kind of documentation than than just taking a bunch of color snapshots. And it was a whole different thing. And I shot black and white and color on and off, you know, black and white on and off through late 86 with him. And then I don't think I ever shot black and white again. It was always color.
Mm-hmm.
And all of those black and white photos now with different publications and articles and eventually, you know, the web, a lot of the color photos, a ton of them, 1,000 of them, you know, or more, had gotten published. They've been seen. But the black and white photos that I'd had from that era were never printed. They were on contact sheets, and they never, I mean, I hadn't really ever looked at them. I mean, they were negative size contact sheets. That's how they existed for 35 years. And I stumbled, I knew where they were, but I mean, I sort of took a second look at them a couple of years ago, and, you know, two things hit me. It's like, one, nobody's ever seen any of these. You know, I mean, Al had not seen any of these. I hadn't seen them. I mean, they'd never been printed. A couple of them had, but most of them not. And two, I thought the fans would love these. You know, these are pretty good, and there's some really neat photos in there. I think the fans should see these. I wonder how Al would feel if I put out a book. Now, I didn't know what putting out a book meant, really, but
right.
If there was some way to put those out there somehow for the fans, you know, and not to give them away. I mean, honestly, everything else had been pretty much given away, you know, one photo at a time. But these were different. These were special. And first thing I did was ask Al if it was okay. And he said, yeah, you know, maybe thinking I wouldn't go through with it or nobody would touch it or whatever it was. And I kind of let it sit for a while. And eventually I was hooked up with a publisher in 2019, actually, out of Cleveland, 1984 Publishing. And they specialize in pop culture coffee table books, which is right up this alley.
Right, exactly.
And I was hooked up by a friend of ours from Sony, who I told him I was, you know, had been thinking about a book for a couple of years. And he says, well, if when you're ready, contact Matthew at 1984, and, you know, this is kind of what they do, and, you know, could be a good fit. Well, it turned out it was a good fit. And by the end of 2019, I had signed a contract for a book.
All righty.
Simple and easy.
I can't wait to look at it. I want to see this.
Simple and easy as that. That's
relive
amazing.
The 80s and the, you know.
Yeah.
Well, it really did work out. I mean, things don't normally work out quite so simply. You know, the first time, I mean, I was hooked up to the right guy with the right company with the right product. And the book turned out great. Now, happily, you know, and that started just before the pandemic hit. And happily, things were well underway by the time everything kind of shut down last March. And there was an initial concern about, well, is anyone going to be carrying the book, you know, since stores really aren't open, and Amazon had kind of, at the time, they had sort of shut down on anything that was not essential. And there was a little bit of a concern that it could be delayed, and it turned out it was fine. By the time the book was ready to come out, it was everyone was back open, people were spending money, the holidays were coming back up, and it was released at the right time, did very nicely. It sold on all the major online stores that begin with A and the bookstores that begin with a B and an N, and et cetera, et cetera.
The names we will not say on the air.
Yeah, the you know, the big WM place.
Yeah.
And they all, the independent bookstores, it sold worldwide. You know, and it did very, very well for Christmas, and it's still selling very well.
That's good to hear.
You know, it's just, and without really any real, I didn't do any of the in-stores that we had talked about because, you know, you don't put yourself in front of people and, you know, sign and touch books and shake hands and things like that during the pandemic. So
right. There
was a lot of promotion that did not happen, and it could still happen. I mean, the book's been out literally 6 months, so it's still a new book. It's still a current issue. It's still on the shelves at stores, which I don't know if that's good. Maybe it shouldn't be on the shelves. Maybe they should have sold us some copies. But that big A company, they're selling, you know, 15, 20 copies a week, you know, just sort of, you know, well after Christmas, which is not bad. That's okay.
I think I know what I have to get Sean as a gift.
Absolutely.
It's a surprise. Don't tell anybody.
Just let you know.
I think A Company is having a 30% off sale. So.
Oh.
Hey now.
Well, I need to get a coffee table first.
I think you can also get it at that company. They sell everything.
Oh. I've heard they have everything.
Everything, exactly.
You can't buy any books until you have a bookcase.
My birthday is coming up.
I know it is. You Gemini.
Yes.
Scary Gemini.
John, you know, the pictures that you have and everything, do you look back at it, I mean, what's the first thing that kind of goes through your mind looking back at some of these memories?
First first thing is, well, you know, what happened to my hair?
That's funny. I was looking at a picture of you on The Simpsons, and it made you look like Pernell Roberts.
Yeah, I gotta
which is
Google
weird
this
because
one, right?
I sent them pictures. I'm the guy with all the photos. I sent them pictures of everyone in the band so they could model it, and they didn't. None of them looked like the pictures I sent. I sent really nice pictures of me, and they somehow figured out what I really looked like. So which at the time, that was like 2003. So that's kind of, Pernell Roberts, you're right.
I was afraid. I looked at it and went, wait a minute.
He was never on The Simpsons either.
Ah, there you go.
Did you get a figurine like Al got? A Simpsons figurine?
Well, there are Simpsons figurines of Al.
Of you?
Really not going to sell.
I'd buy
it.
That's going to take The Simpsons off the air and put, those companies out of business that make and sell those. Yeah, no, not a good idea.
John, it's just amazing the career that you have had, especially with Al and everything. And I think looking back at it, all of you have just been very well blessed. And to join Al on this amazing ride, and who would have thought that, in my opinion, the second coming of Spike Jonze would have a career longer than the original. And
yeah, we didn't, nobody saw this coming. I mean, we still, every couple of years, it's like, are we still doing this? It's like, yeah, yay.
Yeah, and I mean, I've seen you, all of you guys at least five or six times live. It's been a while since I've seen you guys, though, and I cannot wait to take my son to see you guys live, because, I mean, all the costuming changes that you guys do, even on stage, is just amazing to go with each of the songs. I can imagine that you're also a very good quick change artist as well.
Okay. Well, Velcro is our friend. But the costume changes, it seems seamless. We really do put on a show. It's like a rockin' comedy, Broadway show. And between songs, when we do the changes, there's video running.
Right.
And it's very fast-paced. Well, you've seen it.
Right.
But for those who don't know, it's like this is a nonstop for 90 minutes or 2 hours or whatever it is. It's just nonstop. And you kind of lose track of when we're on stage playing and when we're not, because it doesn't ever stop. There's no downtime. There's no dead air. And we take those, 3, 4, 5 minutes. Al usually has a little more of a hairy costume change than we do. We may change a shirt, something like that. Being behind the drums, I don't change my pants. So that saves me,
And how many years has it been since you changed your pants?
I've been wearing the same pants. Well, they had to be let
since
out.
Since 83.
Yeah.
There's a few alterations here and there. But
there you go.
Consequently, I have my own area backstage where they don't come near me. But Al's changes are a little more involved. He's out front, and he has an assistant who handles all of our wardrobe, actually. But she will help him, get stuff ready, or he'll put his arms out and she'll put a coat on him. I mean, he doesn't really have to do that stuff himself. If his hair needs to be tied back and put under a hat or put under a wig or whatever it is, she will do all of that. So he's got help doing that. Our costume changes are not as involved, and in 3 or 4 minutes, we're certainly able to change pants and a shirt and put on or take off a hat, so it's really not a big deal. And I don't think we've ever missed getting back out, hitting our mark on stage. And we have to do that because very often some of these film clips lead into a song that's on the video that has a track, maybe some percussion, or maybe it's just something that I need to hear, so we stay linked up with it, the visual. And we all have to be out there to start. We don't have the luxury of, waiting 10 seconds, while someone gets out and puts their guitar on or something like that. We all have to hit the mark, which means we rehearse with the videos to make sure the timing is right. And if something's not long enough, or if it's a little too tight, it's like, wow, I got out there with 3 seconds to spare. That's not good. You want 10, 15, 20 seconds, maybe 30. So Al will, it's all digital. Al will massage the film clips, make them longer, make them shorter if there's too much time. If we're standing around for a minute and a half, that's kind of needless. So, you know, he'll edit if people aren't laughing at certain bits, he'll edit that stuff out. So it's a constantly changing thing. Once the tour begins and we get a feel for what the audience likes and doesn't like and how we are actually going through the motions and doing the show, you know, after about a week or maybe 10 days, the show settles in, the timing is right, and then we're, I don't want to say we're on autopilot, but it becomes a lot more comfortable and comfort level up there, knowing that costume changes go smoothly, knowing that the audience likes everything they're seeing. You know, that's important to us too. And the audience, obviously, as well.
Yeah, totally agree. Because, I mean, the shows are just fascinating. Is there anything coming up with you guys? I know you had mentioned that possibly next year you guys are going to be touring. But is there anything in the works as far as a new album is concerned?
No, well, let's start with the tour. That we were supposed to be out this year, and that got changed last year. And we were going to head out later this year. We were looking at fall. And late last year, they said, earlier this year, they said, you know, it might be, probably groups are going to be out, but let's wait a little bit till the dust settles. Let's make sure everything is perfectly fine for the audiences and for you guys to travel. Let's just hang on a little bit and, you know, let's shoot for next year. Let's shoot for 2022. So we don't have dates yet at this point, but they will be working on, you know, we're hoping to get out maybe next spring and do a spring summer, you know, run something in the fall. Maybe we're hoping to go overseas, hopefully again.
Mm-hmm.
But again, nothing is in stone, and really the pandemic or what's left of it is going to determine, you know, what everyone does, I think, at that point. As far as albums, we do not have a label. Hal had a number one album and left Sony for good.
Wow.
That was the end of his contract. And at a time when, honestly, product really, you know, physical product really isn't selling. And the only involvement that the labels, you know, fortunately ever had with Al was with the product. They were never involved with the touring, which a lot of labels and bands are intertwined with. You know, it's what they call a 360 deal.
Which are labels, horrible.
Yeah, where they get, even when the label's not selling product, you know, you go out and you play on stage and that's the way you make money. They
right.
get a cut of that. You sell a T-shirt, they get a cut of that.
Right.
You know, so it, which for some bands may work. For us, we never needed that. We would certainly not entertain that at this point. And as far as selling product, we're probably not going to really sell a physical product. You know, I mean, maybe as a novelty, an LP of something, you know, could come out. But mm-hmm. you know, more than that, Al's really not under the gun to produce, you know, albums. There's no contractual, you know, hey, you owe us some albums. So he can be a lot more selective about what he puts out. Not that he just puts out stuff to put it out.
Right.
But he can be very selective. And he also doesn't have to get 10 or 11 or 12 songs before he can issue something. If he wants to issue one song, we can go record it and put out one song, you know, online. And he certainly knows how to promote that. And all of those streamers and companies have become more amenable to dealing with the artists. You know, in the past, that was hard to do. You know, the labels could tell iTunes when they wanted a song to be released so they could promote it, you know, and artists couldn't do that. Well, now artists can do that very easily. And especially Al, because, you know, he is popular. He, you know, streams and sells a lot of digital. But the physical product, we really didn't need a label for that, and that was it. And happily, that last album, Mandatory Fun, was a number one album.
Mm-hmm. On the
real, not comedy charts, so it might have been on the comedy charts too, but on the real Billboard 200 real album charts.
Yeah.
And that was really cool. That was very, very cool.
I love how Al is, he kind of like always kind of keeps everything, like, he turns everything on its ear with the business side of things, kind of like Frank Zappa did. And then I love how the latest hit, the Weezer song, was just a huge radio hit across the board. It wasn't really a parody. It was a huge, and it was so good. Did you have any involvement with that with the band?
I'm sorry. Once again, I had a call waiting beep come through.
Oh,
which,
no.
Which song was it? No, which, I'm not going to take the call. It's Al. He doesn't need to. He's probably.
Oh, it's Al.
Wait a minute.
Yeah,
Al's calling.
Oh, my God.
Which, I'm sorry, which song was it?
The Weezer song, the Africa by Toto.
Because
that went so mainstream. Like, it was.
Yeah.
My kids think that's the real version of it. You know?
I mean, it's not.
I know, right? And he did the full, like, Rivers Cuomo outfit and the band's there. And I didn't see you in the video.
No, you know, none of the band was in the video. That's none of the guys.
Really?
That's Weezer.
Yeah.
Oh, no, I know it's Weezer. But I was just bummed to not see you in there, too. You know, I was just, you know, oh, man.
No, that was not, I mean, the drummer had Ludwig drums and didn't have any hair, so people thought it was me. But
it
was not me.
And he was in the back.
No, he just, honestly, they asked him to do the video, and, you know, he's up for fun. I mean, he has a good time. You know, he's a fun guy.
Yeah.
And he enjoys doing that kind of stuff. And he's a fan of Weezer. We did a Weezer-sounding style parody, in fact, called Skipper Dan.
Oh, I remember that song, yeah.
Oh, I love
that's
it.
That's a cool song.
And that's a very Weezer-ish, you know, you would think, you know, hey, that sounds sort of like Weezer, you know, reworked one of their songs or two or three of their songs and put them together and made a new song and then sang these goofy lyrics. And that's actually a really sort of a poignant, you know, if you listen to it, it's you know, it's funny and all that. There's a lot of emotion in that, you know, and a lot of kind of, you know, it's a very bittersweet, you know, if you examine it. If you don't, it's just a funny, happy song.
Exactly.
But it's really about this guy, you know, for those who don't know, about a guy that wanted to be an actor and do all this stuff and do Shakespeare, and he ended up doing the cruise ride at the Disney company's theme park.
Yeah.
And, you know, telling all the jokes, you know, that they tell. There's like scripts for all these guys, and all the cruise guys like swap all the different things they come up with, and they come up with new stuff.
I have to mention right now, I was a Jungle Cruise skipper for a year and a half.
Oh, cool.
It was so much fun. Oh, my God.
He made a song about you.
I made up a lot of jokes.
There you go.
Yeah. The back side of water.
Yeah.
Look at those hippos.
Oh, look, there's the right side of water. Yeah.
Yeah, right.
It's just amazing how you guys all are so proficient in, you know, the lyrics, everything. It's always relevant. He hasn't missed a beat with, like, you know, the hits and the...
Well, he's got a great band behind him,
right?
Basically is what it is.
Oh,
and an awesome drummer.
Yeah, right.
Oh, thank you. That's true. I've heard that.
John, thank you so much for being on the program. We can't thank you enough. I wish we had more time with you. The current book, again, is called Black and White and Weird All Over. It's a 208-page hard coffee table book that's featuring a number of photographs that John took of Al from 83 to 86. Go pick it up. Where is the main place that they should buy it directly? Can they get it directly off of one of your websites, John?
No, they have to go to that A Company website, but it is on sale.
Yep,
okay.
30% off on the A Company.
30% off. So if they do go to the A Company, make sure that they do go through our website to click on that A banner. Because that way we get a little bit of peace too and everything. It's I can't wait to get it myself. I might have to get it before Amber gives it to me for my birthday.
Shut up!
So.
Don't you do that? Don't you spoil my surprise?
Yeah.
We'll post a link though for that. Are we allowed? We can post
Company.
I mean, it's our sponsor, right?
Yeah, absolutely. Okay. We'll post a link for that, and that way people know where to get it and everything. It's a cool looking cover too.
Yeah,
I like the cover.
Well, thank you very much.
Yeah, again, John. And John, know that with each of our guests that we have, when they come on our program, they become friends of our program itself. And if there's anything else that you got coming up, even if you're playing at a club in Los Angeles or whatever, please don't hesitate to contact us. You've got our number. We got our emails and everything. And just let us know, and we'll promote the heck out of it, too, as much as we can.
Well, cool. I appreciate that. Thank you so much.
Absolutely. Absolutely.
Very fun.
And you take care of yourself and stay healthy. And hopefully when things come around, you can get us some backstage passes to see you and Al.
Yeah, there you go.
Sticks tickets.
I would love to be able to do that.
Yeah. Yeah. And Sticks tickets, exactly.
Right?
Yeah, Mark and Brian tradition, Sticks tickets.
Now it's Weird Al tickets.
Yeah.
Yeah.
All right, John.
Okay.
Thank you so much, John. You take care and you have a wonderful afternoon, buddy.
Thank you. Bye-bye.
All right,
bye,
take
John.
Care.
Bye.
What an interesting...
There's so much more to talk about.
There is, and we can't crowd. We had 45 minutes with him and everything, and there's so much more I want to ask about drums and the programming and how he duplicates it on stage and everything and so forth, you know. Just so much more I want to talk
about.
There's a call, there's a call for you.
There's
a call on the phone for you.
Hmm.
Really?
We have a caller, and who should this caller be? Hello, caller.
It's great to be here on your show. It's Paulie. You know, miss
oh my
you
God,
guys.
Paul.
Love you.
Hi, Paul. How are you, Sir Paul?
From the Beatles.
Yeah, it's great, you know. I mean, Sean, love to hear your voice.
Well, thank you. I love your voice, Paul.
Oh, thanks. You're a bit crackly these days, but, you know, you go through what you go through. You know.
Well, you're older now.
Well, I am a bit. I'm older. You know, 64. Yeah.
Well, you're way over 64 by 20 years, I think.
Will you still need me?
Of course. Who else am I going to idolize on the base?
Well, who will you feed me? I mean, you know,
well,
that's
a little personal there, Sir Paul.
Oh, God.
Yeah, your lobe's gone. You know what I mean?
ladies and gentlemen, on the phone. On the phone with us is our dear friend, Quentin Flynn. How are you, buddy?
Wait, it's not Paul McCartney? I'm leaving.
Now he's bamboozled.
Hey, this is actually a... Hold on. Hi, this is Rivers Cuomo.
Oh! God, you're making my fucking day right now.
Yeah. You know, Quentin and I, we had a bet. He won the bet. So he called in, and I'm just... saying hi. So.
Pull out that guitar. Sing us a little ditty.
Yeah. Hold on. I'll give you back to Glenn. Hey, what's going on, guys?
Not much, brother. How are you?
I'm well. How are you all?
We are doing well. We miss you. Oh, we heard awesome. You're in Chicago right now.
Actually, I'm in Cleveland.
Oh, Cleveland.
Cleveland. Chicago and Minneapolis. Cleveland Rock.
I was literally, that was in my head. Yeah. I'm pouring my tea.
Yeah, it's a good. Well, the Rock and Roll Hall of Fame is amazing, and museum. But
I got to get out there someday.
You do, man. It's a good time, and if I'm still here, I'll take you around.
Oh, well, you got to come back out here though too to see us.
I know, definitely. I miss you guys.
Well, we definitely miss you.
We're working on a plan.
So what's been going on new with you, my friend?
Most recently, a big show in Minneapolis called Anna Minneapolis.
Oh, cool.
Out there, seeing the fans, doing question and answer panels, inspiring, educating, entertaining, signing autographs, taking pictures.
Nice.
It was a love fest.
Oh.
Well, you know, no love's gone, mind you. I kept it in my trousers.
Sean's eyes got like saucers.
So, yeah, no, it was great to finally be at a social event like that. It was the first one I've been to in 14 months.
Oh, God. Yeah.
Yeah.
Yeah. And it's nice to get out.
It's insane. I mean, what the interesting thing was, of course, everybody was, you know, masked and social distancing and all that. But occasionally someone would take their mask down and you'd see their mouth and it just blew my mind. It was like, oh, my God, you have a mouth.
Wow, the thing's disgusting. Put your face back on.
You're not just eyeballs and forehead.
Yeah, please put it back up. I preferred the illusion that I had in my head. The fantasy of your mouth, if you will.
Oh, God.
Yeah.
You can imagine it could be any kind of mouth that you want.
Exactly. And the ones I were imagining were lovely.
Oh, my. Oh, my.
Oh, my. Ooh, let me see your mouth.
Oh, boy. It's been that kind of show this morning.
Dueling decays.
I parked it on the corner.
I parked something somewhere.
Hello.
Oh, my God. These two together.
Oh, my gosh. Yeah.
Nonstop.
Oh. Mentor and mentee.
My laugh. Let's play ventriloquist dummy. Oh.
Stick it up whatever.
Oh, my.
Wow.
We could do this for 4 hours.
Yeah, you guys can, yeah. Absolutely.
Let's not, though. Okay.
Let's not.
Well, I don't know. Why not?
Steve. Well, I'm glad the convention's been going well for you, man. I mean, because like you said, you 14 months cooped up, dude. I mean, that's too much.
Oh, it's insane. Yeah. It's nice to be out there again, making people laugh and, you know, having a lot of fun. Just doing what we normally do as human beings, mm-hmm. socialize. I mean, there's billions of us on this planet, and they've got us restricted with distance and masks and fear. So I'm looking forward to that changing, this obviously, as soon as it can. And we got a little bit of that over the weekend, and it was magical. Mm-hmm. It really
That's
was.
Great. Now, I got to ask you, because this is a little bit more of a personal question, though.
Oh, boy.
Sure.
But have you been practicing your guitar?
Oh,
busted!
Oh my! Yeah. I can't. No, Dad! Don't hurt me!
You get nothing. You lose. Good day, sir.
I want to play the guitar. I've been inspired lately. I've been thinking about it, but no, Sean, I haven't picked it up.
Well, you know, brother, there's always Zoom again.
Oh, boy.
I know. I would love to do that. Yeah, Sean's a great teacher, really great teacher, by the way, for anybody who's listening. Sean Roberts. Great rates as well.
Ah.
He's a compassionate man, and, you know, he can cuddle you like nobody else's business.
There you go.
Oh, boy.
Oh, my.
The personal touch.
Yes, the personal touch.
Yes. Takes you to your breast and suckles you like a newborn. Oh.
And he went there.
And it's there.
The cherry is on the sundae.
Yes.
And I'll do it, too.
So, so actually, you know, speaking of music,
yeah.
I do have a single that I'm going to be releasing.
Really?
Don't have a release date just yet, but made the decision at the convention. Listening to the wishes of the fans, I said, you know, would you want me to release it as is or with a video? And they said, no, just release it. Video can come later. That's fine.
Wow.
Yeah. So very excited about that.
Well, when you release it, then you have to come back on so we can play it then.
Yeah, seriously.
Well, absolutely.
Or play it absolutely. Now. Do you want a world premiere? Quentin Flynn's
well,
single?
Yeah, well... Yeah, we'll do it. It's a single called Single.
It probably really is called that.
Yeah. Oh, looking for love in all the wrong places, mm-hmm. You know. A miserable person. Yeah.
Oh.
The reason I do that is because I want people to feel better about themselves. So I show up late to parties. I
fashionably late, though.
Tragically late. I mean, yes. States, you know, I wear my heart on my sleeve and I let people know that, you know what? You're more special than me.
Okay.
You're more important.
That's a good message.
That's how he connects with the normal people, you know. It's this whole acting exercise, you know, for the great Quentin Flynn, you know. It's like, to go, oh, so that's what those people are like.
Oh, my gosh.
Listen, I am Master Thespian, you're beneath me. I've never stood on a stage this low, but I shall elevate it and the room.
Like a self-deprecating posturing kind of a thing, yes.
Yeah.
That's right.
Yeah,
I want you to feel better when you leave the room.
Oh,
above me.
See, Quentin's the type of person where he's learned to enunciate all the way like Richard Burton, all the way to the back row.
That was pretty good, Sean.
That was pretty good.
Thank you. I appreciate that.
We were both surprised.
I was just shooting for something. I didn't know, and wow, it stuck.
Richard Burton is always a good call.
Yeah, it's stuck, and now we're going to have to clean it off.
Oh, puking dog.
Oh, God.
Well, then there's Zachary Smith. You know, from Lost in Space.
Wait, now I want to
remember him, or if you don't,
I want to hear more about this.
Everything, dear boy.
He just goes.
He does.
I want to hear more about this single. Is this a real thing?
It is. It's called Freeway Dream. Freeway Dreams.
Freeway Dreams. Okay.
A song I wrote actually in Los Angeles when I was on 405.
What else are you going to do on the 405?
What else am I going to do on the 405?
Write a song or get really angry at people. It's like you choose your vibe.
Well, that's it.
Oh, the day is full of surprises.
The anger is. Oh, the anger is always an option, but the poison one. put it in your pen and get it out. Once again, a metaphor could be used as an innuendo. But, I was a member of the 405, and I was writing about a gal that I was in a relationship years before. And it just turned into kind of an ethereal experience. And the wonderful result is kind of more of a pop rock song with a folk feel, a little bit of Eagles, a little bit of Gin Blossoms, Tom Petty, kind of in that wheelhouse.
Oh, I was going to say Taylor Swift, so that's a little different.
Wow, Taylor Swift.
You should see me when I put on a skirt. You do think Taylor Swift.
I mean, we can have you in studio and you can wear a sundress if you want.
I will, and I'll play the ukulele.
Yes!
And here's the funny thing. He'll do it,
too. I know he will.
He'll do it. He'll absolutely do it. Oh, my gosh.
I'll learn a Taylor Swift. I'll learn the lyrics to one of her songs, but I will play the melody to toe through the tulips while I sing it.
I love it. I love the idea. So how did you? So this single, you're singing on it. How did you? Yeah. Did you produce it? Like, well, how did this evolve?
Well, I had a number of songs that I hadn't recorded, and I went to my friend Mark Danzeisen's Sausage Factory Studios, and he said, "Play me a few songs," and I played him a few, and he said, "That one." But that's really, I mean, that seems the
I like
most
that one better.
Simple and uncomplicated of the bunch. He said, "Yeah, and that's why we're going to do it. It's great." And so it was me and Mark. I laid down the rhythm track and did the vocals, a bit of the harmonica and whatnot. And then I gave him ideas for the backing vocals and things like that. And he, besides me playing guitar, he played bass, drums, and did the backing vocals.
Very cool.
Nice.
He's a hell of a producer, Mark Danzeisen, yeah.
Well, I was going to say, you know, if you needed a drummer by chance, you know, we do have the phone number for John Bermuda Schwartz.
We do.
Right. Exactly.
You know, he can play anything.
Which is nice.
Exactly.
Yeah. Including an accordion box.
Really? Okay.
Yeah.
Well, anything. The kazoo.
Good to know.
Yeah, everything.
And the accordion.
I'm kind of obsessed with kazoo today. I don't know.
Holy cow.
So we'll have
I played. I'm the definitive kazoo player. Not many people know that, but it's true.
That's amazing.
And, you know, wax paper and a comb.
Yes.
That's good. True. The Beatles did it.
They did.
They did.
It's simple.
They certainly did, Paul.
Yeah. They did, Paulie. I can't believe it. Are they doing another press junket? You should be here with me in Yoko trying to change the world.
God, I love Quentin.
I know. So
we got to get you out here, brother.
The thing is, you just got to relax, man.
We got to get you out here, brother, some way, shape, or form, man. By hook or by crook, we got to get you out here.
I know. Yeah, we're working on it, and I agree. We just got to find the place, and we must come.
Yes, absolutely. Yeah.
Should we play the game together?
Yeah,
we
you know what?
Let's
play the game. You want to play the game with us, Quentin?
I'd love to.
All right, let's go for it.
And now, ladies and gentlemen, boys and girls, children of all ages, the game show that made Mickey Mouse say, "What the fuck was that, Pluto?" Quiz me. Quiz you.
You know,
I
every
couldn't
week,
even do it. That's
every week is getting interesting with him now.
It's just, where the hell he pulled this out of his ass?
It really is.
I can't believe he cursed like that. You're canceled.
Oh boy.
Yeah. That was actually there's a South Park episode where Mickey Mouse is the bad guy and they're talking, "Sir, we have a situation in South Park." "Huh? South Park? Do I own this one?" "No, sir, not yet."
Oh my god.
Oh, that's great.
Want me to do the questions?
Yeah, pick questions that don't suck this time. Jesus.
You know what? You suck.
You suck.
Question number one.
God, I hope you chose good questions.
What was the first drink in space?
Amber.
Sean. Amber.
Gatorade.
Steve.
I don't know.
Steve. Tang.
Sean.
John.
Water.
Really? Okay, wait. Okay,
Quentin.
Yeah, let's think. Let's think about. Okay, Quentin, I'm sorry I forgot you're there. I was excited.
Coffee.
I'm sorry. The answer is Coca-Cola.
I was about to say.
Really?
That's right here.
It was going to be
I should know that. That's my favorite drink.
It was going to be something super corporate. That's what it was going to be.
I thought it was water.
Wow.
Coca-Cola.
Yeah, I was gone water.
Yeah.
Question
number Tang.
Number two. You like two? Two is good.
That's good.
Is this two?
This two?
Incorrigible, these two.
This is two. Definitely two.
$2 million.
Ray! And this is just on the phone.
Yes. All right, go to question two, damn it.
What is the most consumed manufactured drink in the world?
It's more drinks.
Coca-Cola.
I'm sorry, what was your name, sir?
Quentin Flynn, Coca-Cola.
Incorrect.
Most manufactured drink
in the world.
Did you pick some like random drink quiz? What the hell is this?
Sean,
beer.
No, you know what? I'm gonna go to Steve because Amber's being a cranky pants.
Oh, there you go.
Ooh.
I don't know, lemonade.
Amber, I will go back to you now that you had your time out.
Manufactured drink. Oh my gosh. Is it? Okay. Give us a hint. Is it an alcoholic beverage?
No.
Oh.
I know, I'm bummed too. I was kidding.
Not Coke.
I'm bummed about that.
I mean, manufacturing.
It's right in front of you.
Steve.
Amber.
It's Amber. It's tea.
That's it.
Well, okay, that doesn't.
What? It's manufactured.
It's manufactured.
You're happy. You won.
Yeah.
I don't like these questions again.
Well, they don't play. Normal people don't go out in the backyard and pick tea.
Yeah,
that doesn't.
Yeah, it was.
You don't have to play then. Just sit there and shh. Oh,
question number three.
I'm too competitive to not play the quiz show.
Shh.
Every week. Okay, fine, fine.
Zip it.
Translation,
zip it.
I love your passion.
Which is the only edible food that never, ever goes bad?
Sean. Honey.
That is right.
Yeah, okay. Yeah.
I knew that.
Honey.
Question number four.
Everything revolves around my tea right now.
Which country does Gouda cheese originate from?
Gouda?
Gouda.
Oh, that's Steve.
That's a Gouda.
That's a so good.
That's a Gouda cheese. A
Gouda.
Steve.
Steve.
Italy.
Amber.
Amber.
France.
Let Quentin go first.
Quentin, Germany.
So far, Quentin's the closest as far as geographical wise.
I don't trust your knowledge of geography, Zach, to know.
I don't make these up. It's a freaking. You know what? The internet's never wrong.
No, I'm just saying.
That's right.
Your thought and proximity of
yeah.
Close
I saw
to.
A quote of Abraham Lincoln said that. The internet's never wrong.
Okay. Okay. One more time. You ready? Amber. Austria.
I'm sorry. The answer is the Netherlands.
I've been there. It's a beautiful place. I never would have guessed it.
Wow. The Netherlands.
Question number.
So you never even tried the local cheese then?
Five.
I know. Only the local prostitutes.
Oh, yeah.
Okay. Hello.
Amsterdam.
Hey, oh.
The red light district.
Is that wild?
It's a 2-for-1 sale.
What was the first feature-length animated movie ever released?
Steve.
Quentin.
Whoa.
Steve first, then
Steve
Quentin.
First, then Quentin.
Snow White and the Seven Dwarfs.
Oh, shit. That's right.
Oh!
Yes.
I knew if it was some Disney bullshit, he was going to know exactly what it was.
Yeah, I know. Question number six. Apparently, I should have saw that one coming.
It was good.
That was good. What TV series showed the first interracial kiss?
TV show.
Quentin.
Sean.
Quentin, Star Trek.
That is right.
Yes.
Star Trek.
Wow.
Yes.
Yeah.
And that was between who?
Captain Kirk and Lieutenant Uhura.
Oh, my.
I thought it was Klingons.
No.
It was some alien.
They did Klingon for a while.
Oh, God. Question.
You'll
seven.
Find Klingons in your underwear.
Let's see here. What was okay? You know what? I'm really gonna put Steve's Disney knowledge to the test.
Oh boy!
All right. What are the names of Cinderella's stepsisters?
Steve.
Sean.
Steve.
Fiona.
Nope.
No.
Amber.
Let me.
Okay,
I call
fine.
My name.
Did you call your
Sean?
Name?
I call
yeah,
my name.
Sean,
God,
go
I
ahead.
Get too competitive at this
thing
point.
One and thing two.
No, oh my God. Okay, I only know one of them.
Amber. Go ahead.
Drizella.
That is correct.
But I don't
yes.
know the other name. The other name is
Quentin. Can
and...
you get Drizella and Quentin? Can you get the other one?
Yes. Well, first of all, that's actually a nickname. So the full names are ugly and uglier.
Oh God!
You like know what I said? Thing one and thing
two. I just remember the mom goes Drizella, like this whole like dramatic yell at her and the thing. So
it's actually Anastasia and Drizella.
Anastasia and Drizella.
That's right, Anastasia.
Okay. You got the hard.
Anastasia's
one. You got the hard one too. Yeah, it is.
Yeah.
Question number nine.
Number nine.
Yeah.
Number nine. Turn me on, dead man.
Who kept score? Nobody.
I think Steve actually has been on the lead.
It's what's weird is that he's not even paying attention the entire show. He's playing on his tablet the entire time, and he wins the quiz show.
Well, I'm looking at this movie called Finley the Fire Engine.
Oh,
okay.
Good
oh,
Lord! Rest
no!
their case,
Sean. Stop with these sex noises.
It looked like, was it fun, Quentin?
It was.
Oh my
I loved.
God.
I played Garby the garbage truck and Finley the fire engine. Uh-huh. Oh my God. I love Crash.
All right.
Oh boy.
Okay. Here's a sports question. Which is the only American football team to go a whole season undefeated,
Steve,
including the Super Bowl? Steve.
Miami Dolphins.
Wow. It is.
Wow.
Wow, wow, wow.
Notice where my hands went?
I was going to guess. I was going to say Patriots or I don't know.
No, they cheat. So they don't count.
Yeah. Yeah, the Dolphins are the only team. It's true.
All right.
Don Shula.
The final question is Among Us. All right.
Just
now,
say it.
This could be really easy or it could be hard. Let's see how everyone hold on to your butts.
God, he's like, I'm going to pee my pants waiting for this shit. Come on.
How many colors are in the rainbow?
Well, amber.
Amber.
Five. Six.
Sean.
You don't give a Sean.
Seven.
Sean wins.
Oh,
Sean
wait, okay. So. Oh, I was thinking of the gay pride flag. Sorry.
I let you guys.
Are there seven, really?
Yeah, there really is.
I was thinking of the gay pride. Sorry, that's it.
What are they?
The ones that are in the rainbow.
We want verification of this information.
Yellow, blue, red, green, orange, purple. I'm guessing.
Red, orange, yellow, green, blue.
I bet it's
purple.
Red, orange, yellow, green, blue, indigo, and violet.
Indigo.
Indigo.
I think puce is in there somewhere.
Oh, I'm sorry. Indica? Wait, indigo.
Indigo. Yes, indigo. Sativa. Sativa also.
Yeah. Either way, it's Roy G. Biv's. Those are the colors. red, orange, yellow.
Roy G. Biv's. Oh, my gosh. I forgot the acronym.
There you go.
Blue.
Indigo,
violet. You're fucking killing me over here. I know the colors, okay? I'm an artist. I'm an artist. I'm a producer, too. I produce Quentin Quinn, his Freeway Dreams album. For promotional purposes, you want to go to Quentin Quinn at Twitter or Quentin Quinn 1 Instagram, okay?
Okay.
I produce.
Thank you very much.
Misery.
I got to get a hot dog and a Coke.
In that order.
In that order. I don't want any tank, okay?
No thanks.
Oh, God. Quinn, it's so good to hear your voice, brother.
Oh, thanks. You too, man. Thanks for having me on board.
Absolutely, man. Anytime you want to chime in, you are more than welcome here. You know that. Your family.
Thank you. I love you.
Love you too, brother. All right, guys. That is the show. The show's website is yourweeklydose.com. Facebook page is Your Weekly Dose. Find us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1.
You can follow me, Steve. Facebook is Steve Silva. Twitter is at SilvaLining69.
And you can find me, Amber Ash McCary, with my name.
McCary!
Yes, thank you. On the thing. And we're going to post, I post some pictures. I'm going to post a link to the Weird Al book. And,
good, okay.
I'm going to post some questions, too. So keep an eye out and interact, for Christ's sake. What the hell are you guys doing?
I know.
Get your shit together, man.
Yeah, and and if you want to be my friend and see what stupid things I do, I'm at Zombie Mel Gibson on Instagram.
He plays with puppets and stuffed animals.
I do.
And if you want to follow me, Sean, it's simply on any of the social media, it's simply Sean R. Unplugged. And don't forget, guys, you can listen to us on Delmarva Talk Radio, 7 a.m. Wednesday through Friday, and also on Lime City Radio at noon Wednesday through Fridays. And, of course, we are live with our syndication every Saturday morning as well at 1 o'clock. Actually, it's afternoon for them, 10 a.m. for us. So, they know. They figured it out. So
Quentin's still here, too.
Yes.
Oh, hi, Quentin. He's still there.
He's still there.
I'm dabbing the tears under my eyes from listening to Tony Orlando and Dawn's Kaya Yoga around the old oak tree.
Yeah, right?
God. I don't want to have people come to my social media platforms any longer because I'm just sad and lonely.
Oh, God. Oh, boy. All right, thank
Somebody
you, guys.
Take the razor away from me. Take the razors away.
All right, Quinn, we'll talk to you later.
Take care,
Love
buddy.
Y'all.
Love
y'all.
You too. Bye. Take care, Bye. Quinn. In the meantime, guys, we'll see you guys next week and be good to each other.
Thank you for listening to this week's show. Don't forget to support the show by shopping on Amazon. Just go to our website, yourweeklydose.com, click on the Amazon banner, and bookmark. Then start shopping. Remember to follow us on Twitter and Instagram at yourweeklydose1 and Facebook at yourweeklydose. We'll see you next week.